Welcome to Season 2 of Level With Us, where we'll be taking even deeper dives into the root causes and the intersecting issues of Central Ohio's housing crisis. Whether you're a first-time listener or a follower of the pod, thank you for lending your ears to an effort that is desperate for more attention, more voices, and more action. Everyone is affected by our housing shortage, whether you're a homeowner, a renter, a landlord, or someone experiencing homelessness or housing instability. And all of us have a role to play in fixing it. So here in Season 2, I'm bringing on more experts, community organizers, and leaders that I hope inspire more of you to find out what that role is. Last month, we discussed in depth a paper written by local researchers that examined how housing policy contributed to the quality of life of Columbus's Linden community. We had on co-author Dr. Kiara Bennett, as well as Nick Jones of Nationwide Children's Hospital, to explain the paper's findings and how we could amend policy to help not just Linden, but all of Central Ohio live with good health and access to opportunity. Today, I'll introduce Jason Reese, Associate Professor in City and Regional Planning, and Vice Provost for Outreach and Engagement at Ohio State. He's another co-author of the paper, and bear with me while I trip over this title, A History of the Impacts of Discriminatory Policies on Housing and Maternal and Infant Health in an Ohio Neighborhood. Jason has been doing housing and community development work for over two decades. He previously served as research director at the Kerwin Institute, and in his work he has partnered with Linden and Nationwide Children's Hospital, where they looked at historic policy that shaped Linden, either by creating opportunity or destabilizing the community.
You did that through the lens of really trying to understand how that impacts the lived experience for folks in that community, and looking at what's the resultant impact in terms of health outcomes, and in this case, a focus on maternal health outcomes.
We talked about this in last month's episode, and if you haven't yet listened, I encourage you to go do that. Maternal and infant health are considered bellwethers of the overall quality of life within a community.
When I think about, I would say, thinking about our public health issues that we deal with here in the U.S., infant mortality rates that are too high when you look at global standards, very deep inequities in our health system. At the same time, we have the most expensive health care system in the world by a very large, large margin. In fact, at least the last time I looked at the data, number two on that list, I believe, was China. And if you could double their spending on health, healthcare, and still not come up with the volume of spending that we have. So we spend a lot of money, but we don't have great outcomes. And I think one of the reasons for that is that we don't get into these deeper social determinants of health that really are leverage points to producing better health for everyone.
What does it mean to consider the social determinants of health? Well, there are a handful of factors that contribute to public health that experts have identified. Housing or lived environment is one of them, along with economic stability, your access and quality of the education you get, healthcare access, and your overall social and community context.
Housing in particular, I like to think of as a multifaceted social determinant of health. It impacts you from the perspective of, one, its affordability, which we know is just a tremendous psychological stressor. And in fact, can produce almost trauma-like experiences for folks who are really in fear of being homeless, losing their housing, being evicted. Obviously, housing matters too from the perspective of what kind of environmental risks are you dealing with indoors. We see dilapidated housing being aligned with things like lead poisoning, like chronic respiratory challenges and asthma. And then finally, where your housing is matters, right? Because that environmental question of where can I afford to live and is that a safe community? Does it have resources around it? And so we know that housing is critical to understanding, what type of environment you're going to be living in. Mm-hmm. I think, given kind of how much we spend on healthcare and how little from a macro level, we invest in affordable housing, that we ought to look at housing as actually an investment that would actually pay dividends, would produce a lot of potential cost savings in avoiding a lot of negative health outcomes. At the micro scale, I'll share some evaluation work I've been doing with Families Flourish. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things that we quickly learned with that program is that when we were evaluating the pilot of that program, we realized that most of the kids were dealing with really chronic respiratory issues, very consistent asthma attacks, lots of hospitalizations or ER visits due to asthma. And we saw when families moved into healthier housing units, those issues just went away, in a matter of probably 6 to 12 months. It's just a real good reminder that, that move to a healthy home at an individual household level, saved that working parent from having to make 12 trips to the emergency room because their kid's having asthma attacks. So I think there's a lot of ways that we need to kind of, if we're going to get a handle around some of our broader health challenges we have in this country, we have to think differently, and we have to invest our resources differently in those things that we know matter.
We've seen investment at the local and even state level, but one area Jason believes greater investment is needed is in innovation in the housing sector, led by the federal government.
We, through the various administrations of the last 12 to 16 years, we've seen the policy frameworks shift radically back and forth from the Obama administration to the Trump administration to the Biden administration and now to the Trump administration again. The one singular thread I have seen through all, at least three of those previous presidential administrations, was at least in a feel that at the federal level, we have to do something to help build more. This is where HUD, for example, used to fund not a lot of money, but a little bit of money into kind of innovation in the housing sector. Mm-hmm. I think that's really a role for the federal government. They need to be able to actually fund innovation so that we can figure out better ways to build that are more economical.
With changing housing demographics, creativity and innovation are going to be key. Gen Z, who now range in age from 13 to 28, are starting families and renting and buying homes of their own. And they're looking for different qualities in a home and neighborhood than generations past. Typically, they're looking for something smaller and more manageable, in a walkable area, near amenities and community. But many of the most popular communities Gen Z and others enjoy could never be built today under our current zoning codes. Couple those challenges with the fact that many from the millennial and Gen Z generations are unable to afford homes outright, even where they themselves were raised, and you get a market that keeps 1 in 3 people between 18 and 34 at home with their parents.
I see it also as a big generational challenge because, again, we know we need to keep young folks here. I work for Ohio State. We want to keep our graduates from Ohio State, Columbus State. We want to keep them here in this community so that they can contribute and make this their home. Where I see a real challenge right now is for our folks coming out of college, starting those kind of their early in their career. They're trying to navigate a market that's so much more challenging mm-hmm. than, say, what I dealt with 20, 25 years ago when I was in that space. I talked to some of our students who are graduate students and, just curious, how much do you pay for rent for that, 2-bedroom place in Gahanna? And, it's often they're telling me rents that are way in excess of the mortgage that I have.
Yeah.
We're going to see more and more folks like that really impacted. At a personal level, I have 3 daughters, and my wife and I have said, I don't know how they're going to afford to live here in their early 20s, right? If rents continue to go this way, they might have to live together. We might have to come up with some solution. I think you're going to have a lot of families that are going to be dealing with questions like that in the future.
As more people enter your typical home buying age, our aging population continues to grow as well. Ohio's population is both old and aging. Those 55 or older make up nearly a third of our population, and by 2050, Those 85 and older will double in population, with many living on a fixed income. We're likely to see more people struggling to maintain the cost and upkeep of their homes.
I think the other big population to think about in this context is the aging population, because they will need to downsize. Most folks want to figure out a way to somehow age in place, whether that's their existing home or it's somewhere else. Are there co-housing models that we should be looking at with our aging population and our younger folks? There are things that we could do in that space that would really help alleviate the problem, but it's different. And we'd have to be willing to kind of try new things and do things a different way. I think federal guidance, too, and support for the voucher program would be critically important. Most folks who qualify for a housing voucher will never get one because the wait lists are so long. To me, that's a simple fix if we just allowed that program to function like it's supposed to and acted as if it was a true entitlement program.
As of 2024, the waitlist for housing choice vouchers, commonly referred to as Section 8 housing vouchers, was 36,000 Franklin County residents long. The longest person on the list has been waiting since 2015. Nationally, nearly 3 million are waiting to get an email from their local housing authority to hear they've finally been pulled off the waitlist. Unfortunately, rather than expanding the program, HUD's emergency housing voucher program, specifically for those fleeing domestic violence or escaping homelessness, may actually run out of funding by 2026, leaving 60,000 more Americans vulnerable. Even those who qualify for housing vouchers must earn an incredibly low income, discouraging economic mobility because the more you make, the less help you receive, even if you're not entirely ready to be self-sufficient.
We need to think more flexibly around issues of the benefit cliff for those folks who are on housing assistance or having a housing voucher. Folks shouldn't be penalized for increasing their income. We should have systems in place that allow folks to, at least especially younger families, grow their income so that they can navigate the housing market more fully, have more choice in where they can live. Hopefully maybe think about home ownership several years down the line, programs like that that could offer that support.
So to recap what we've learned over the last two episodes, too many people are living in substandard housing or entirely without safe, stable housing, and it's not just affecting the health of individuals and our larger community, but it's also costing us billions in tax dollars. The good news, thankfully, is there are researchers and leaders out there dreaming up incredibly creative and even common sense solutions that can address our housing challenges and create a stronger, healthier community. Will any of these solutions pan out? Time will tell. I know Leah Evans, our CEO here, is advocating for more funding for affordable housing at every level of government, and I hope all my listeners do their part in advocating for the issues that are most important to them, most fundamentally by voting in every election that you can. I and Homeport believe that we all have our own role to play in creating the community that we deserve. Issues such as housing access can feel big and abstract, but the presence or absence of the stability that housing provides can be the difference between a life of struggle and trauma and one that is long, healthy, and successful.
Certainly talk to enough families through the work with Families Flourish to see, they're housed in some cases in their previous housing, but the stress that they were enduring was just unbearable because of concerns about safety, because of violence nearby, issues with the unit itself, living in a house that is probably making your child sick.
Yeah.
Is a form of chronic stress that can be quite debilitating.
Three of the four burners on your stove, don't worry.
Yes. Pest infestations that are triggering asthma attacks among your kids. So I think we need to be attentive to that. And particularly, and this is where I kind of lean into the research, we know this is most critical for families with children, and younger children in particular, because those environmental conditions, we've seen it in study after study, are profoundly important to their development, through their ability to thrive, not just their physical health, but their mental health, how they do in school. So I think there is a strong impetus there that we do have to think about these other issues, particularly when we're talking about kids, because the research is really clear. This is these having kids trapped in environments that are unsafe, where they don't have the resources that they need, where maybe their school facilities are underfunded and don't have the programs and other supports that they need for them, that's going to be very detrimental to not only the outcomes for that individual child, but for the community as a whole, right? If we have lots and lots of kids who are, being placed in conditions and situations where, we're making it challenging for them to just thrive, mm-hmm. Which is something we should be supporting, really making sure that our youth have access to safe environments, be able to get out in, actual green space, not have to deal with chronic housing instability and changing schools all the time because you're always kind of trying to preemptively move either due to eviction or fear of eviction. And so I think there is, a strong case to be made that particularly for, we think about youth in this community, it is more than about just having a roof over your head.
Level With Us is brought to you by Homeport and is recorded, mixed, and edited by Lauren Sega. All sources are in the show notes. Homeport creates strong communities by developing quality, affordable homes on a cornerstone of dignity, security, and opportunity. To learn more, or if you'd like to support our mission, visit us at homeportohio.org.